is enjoyable to the human to take his or her own destiny in his or her own hands. And that is the human pull. It's a soulish pull, an emotional pull to control your destiny. Remember the anecdote of the man traveling and the airliner who suddenly realized he was not in control of his own destiny. It took a great shock for the plane to go into convulsions for him to realize that his destiny was not in his own hands. But this is why the false teaching of human free will appeals to people, because they want to take their destiny into their own hands. And free will, I remind you, is the damning word there is free. It's independence from God, complete independence from God. That's what a free will is. If you believe in free will, then you believe in complete independence from God. Is that what you believe? Because not even God can control a will that is free, hence free. If God is controlling it, it's not free. Satan can't control a free will. God can't control a free will. Nothing can control a free will. Free will is a false teaching. However, the same principle of wanting to control one's own destiny, and that's at the heart of free will, human pride, arrogance. Who thinks they're going to control me? That's at the heart of free will. And it's at the heart of political Christianity, which has been on the rise for quite some time, but is now reaching epidemic proportions. I talked about this earlier, the seven mountains of influence that Christians want to have on the earth. James Dobson, back in his heyday, pushed incessantly for Christians to become more and more involved in politics. And with the idea that the earth should be influenced by Christians. But this is not, was not the teaching of Jesus Christ. He said that his kingdom was not of this world. And so what business do we have making our kingdom of this world? We are the lights in the world, but we shine as a testimony. It is not our mission to steer the government. But as I write in my upcoming book, Beyond Politics, if you can peacefully change government, if you can peacefully administer government, that's a gift of God. We need good people to run city councils and governorships and even the presidency. Okay, but by the time you get to the presidency, things are so corrupt that nobody's acting out of good principles anymore. But in lower levels of government, I may be different than some of my compatriots here, but I believe that if that is in you, to want to rule and guide, not rule, but to guide, to make policy that's good for people, otherwise known as politics, then do it. But don't lose your peace. Don't put your eggs in this basket. I compare it to the home. Parents want to have control over their children and control their household, their finances. That's another form of politics. It's a microcosm of how the government should be run, how you run a home, how you don't get into debt, how you manage your finances, how you control, it's hard to say, not control the people. You don't want to control people, but guidelines. We put guidelines into place. Governments do. And in your home, you have a sovereign home, don't you? You have walls and you have doors. And, you know, criminals today, they get the idea that if you don't protect your stuff, then they have a right to it. That's their mindset. Forget thou shalt not steal. Forget about that. They figure that you owe your stuff to them if you're too stupid to guard it. Anyway, that's the state of the world today. So we have doors and locks. And so I just extrapolate that to the nation. If people want to know my national policy or what I think is ideal national policy, I just look at ideal home policy. What do you do in your house? That's what you do in your country. It's that simple. Do you have borders in your house? Yes, unless you're living on a bench in the park. In which case, you're not in a house, are you? You're on a bench in a park. So if you have borders in your house, then we have borders in our country. It just makes sense. Or else just get rid of the idea of countries. Get rid of passports and visas. Okay, but I'm sorry, that's not in place. Therefore, we have to observe laws that are existent in our countries and in our homes. So, not sure how I got onto that. But Israel, there was a link somewhere. Put this, go back and rewind and figure out how I got onto that. I think it was worthwhile. I think that was a worthwhile little avenue that I turned down, a little side street. So therefore, I believe in, you know, if somebody comes in your house to kill your children, you want to protect your children. As you know, I don't like loud noises, so I don't have a gun. People want to own guns, great. Protect their stuff, fine. It's not my personal choice, okay? Because I don't like loud noises. I don't like heavy metal things. That's just me. I don't even like heavy metal music. So it all applies to me. See, heavy metal? I don't like heavy metal in any category, music or weapons. I might take a knife and stab an intruder. Yeah, yeah, I think I would. Because it's quiet, you see. So I would protect my children, of course. I think I would tend to use my bare hands. I might strike an intruder with a blunt object. For instance, this telephone. If I had a telephone like this, this looks... Can you believe that I'm actually holding this telephone? If you're watching on the laundry cam, this telephone looks like it's from the 70s. Something like you would see on the Bob Newhart show. So I might attack someone with a telephone or use the cord. Wrap it around your neck. Get away from my children. And so we have to have a national policy that protects our country. That's why we have standing army. That's why we have the weekend warriors. That's why this stuff won't be necessary in the coming kingdom. But now it is. But the national policy doesn't have to be your personal policy. As an individual, you can choose to suffer evil. You can choose to allow yourself to be wronged and not stand up for your rights. That's my personal preference. Paul talks about this in, I think, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, or is it 1 Corinthians chapter 6? He talks about not using, not going to court against fellow believers, allowing yourself to be defrauded. That's a privilege. Allow yourself to be defrauded. Taxes are way too high. The government regulations are ridiculous, and yet we submit to them. I submit to them because I'm a good citizen, and my kingdom's not of this world. What do I care? However, without waiting for the return of Messiah, this is the thing. Christians are not waiting for the return of Messiah. These people are not just casually, getting into government to make things happier for their families, happier for their countrymen. No, they're trying to influence the world for God. They're trying to turn our Christian nation, so-called, into a Christian world. And the thing is, they're going to succeed. God is behind this mad rush of Christians to take control of government because the world is going to be run by one giant religion. Amalgamation of all the four major religions, however, run by Christianity. So forget suffering like saints, which you're supposed to do, Israel. No, they seem to receive every token of divine approval as they are riding on the back of the wild beast. They don't wait for the return of Messiah. They rule a rebellious earth. And all the treasures of the nations at the time of the end are going to be theirs, but again, without, this is the bad part, the intervention of Jehovah. They've taken their destiny into their own hands. That's where I let off. And they have actually succeeded because God lets it happen. I mean, there's no way this could possibly succeed unless God caused 10 kings to form his opinion. Israel's thinking, wow, we've really run on a streak of good luck here. No, you haven't. Numbnuts. That's a singular. Numbnuts is plural. I don't know. You haven't. It's not because of your own brilliance, because so far you have not been able to mobilize the world. But now all of a sudden you do. It's not because of some sudden stroke of brilliance. It's because it's God's time for it. And now he's just removing all the roadblocks. Isn't that interesting when suddenly there are no roadblocks? Wow, a clear path. I can do whatever I want. I can implement policies. Wow, this is weird. No, it's not really weird. It's God letting you do it because it's time for the end. So they have taken their destiny in their own hands. They've established, Israel has, in the end, a super government. Where does that ring a bell in my little brain? It's because that's what Christians want to have today, a super government, which dictates the policies of all cabinets and demands tribute from all treasuries. This is the bizarre situation, is that all treasuries of the earth will give tribute to the super treasury that is owned by Israel. And it's a super government, the one world government. And one world government is such a, I don't like that term because it's associated so much with conspiracy theories. And there's no conspiracy theory about this. It's simply happening. Humanity has wanted to join forces for a long time. Go back to the Tower of Babel. There's no conspiracy theory there. They're happy to be unified, and they're building a tower. God came down with a big fist, scattered them all over the place, and suddenly it's easy to come back. Wow, this is weird. Yeah, it's not weird. It's not weird when that's exactly what God wants to do, and he's making it easy. You notice how hard God makes it for us to get stuff done that we want done? I would go so far as to possibly say, no, I'm going to go so far as to say that this is a sign of divine favor, and that he is limiting your little self and your desires and the things that you think should happen. If you could just get it together, right? You just want to get it together. Why can't I get it together, Martin? Well, because God doesn't want you to have it all together, to keep you weak and humble and reliant on him. So, in fact, if you were to see things suddenly working perfectly and like a yellow brick road in front of you or a red carpet, things falling into place, ducks lining up, wouldn't you be just a tad suspicious? Yes, I guess we would, because we're somewhat cynical, aren't we? Maybe it's not good to be that cynical. Well, this is just God being nice all of a sudden. Not to say that God isn't nice, but he disciplines those he loves, and so he keeps us constricted, restricted. We can't do what we want. And that's the way it is in this eon. That's the way it was with Jesus. That's the way it was with Paul, who, when he died, speaking of Paul, there were only two copies of his letters probably in existence. And he died in faith, not having received the promises. But he relied on God, that God would preserve his word, preserve his work. He worked as under the Lord. And now look, Paul's writings are everywhere. God is faithful. But in this eon, in this world, we personally probably will not see. Don't you feel sorry for the artists? Like, well, Van Gogh, he died a pauper, didn't he? Mozart was buried in a common grave. These people did not receive the accolades. It's very rare for an artist to receive his due in his day. Many artists were this way. And I think that's a God thing, too. The work is great, phenomenal, first class, top drawer, and yet the artist, to keep the artist humble, in fact, artists do their best work without accolades. As soon as a garage rock and roll band becomes famous, generally their work deteriorates, because now they have to deal with the accoutrements of fame and fortune, and these are distracting. So the greatest rock bands are those that are still in garages. The greatest writers are struggling away in anonymity. It's very rare to become famous and then to keep up the good work, because you do your best work under duress. We are under duress. Jesus Christ was under duress. Paul was under duress, and they produced great work. Israel is sliding down easy now, and she's doing crap work. She's losing her freaking mind, because God has basically said, all right, that's it, I'm giving up on you, relatively speaking. And only a nation who is in covenant relationship with God can be divorced, can be given up on can be referred to as unfaithful. How can Israel be called unfaithful Israel unless she was once faithful Israel? And she was. And those were the days when she was being disciplined. Turn to the left, there was God's big thumb standing in the way. Turn to the right, there's the palm of God's big hand. We can't go anywhere. This God has us checkmated no matter where we turn. Yeah, those were the good old days. Those were the good old days. Just like for us, these are the good old days. Suddenly you're going to have a glitter-littered path to glory. Those are going to be the bad old days. Those are going to be the days when, you know, Israel, you really quickly forget the source of all your blessings. We saw it in the wilderness. It's like, what have you done for me lately? What have you done for me lately, God? Sure, we had the quail. Sure, you led us across the Red Sea. What have you done for us lately? So that's the problem with Israel. What have you done for us lately? She quickly forgets the source of her blessing. God leaves her alone for 5 minutes, and boom, she's off to the races. Talk about off to the races. Babylon, who rides the kings of the earth. Now that's off to the races.